to Riddle and the Reporter on this Saturday morning. Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser live from the Game Studios, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And also, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app and use promo code THEGAME. Happy Saturday, fellas. As always, the weekend is now kicked off. How are we all doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Testing 1, 2, 3, Frazier. We are rolling this Saturday.
Yeah. I started talking. I was like, why can't I hear myself?
Yeah, rolling on no sleep right
hey,
now.
Hey, we're all good. We're all good. And you know what? It was a stellar of a game last night for you, Frazier. So I know it was fun.
It was a part of my ticket to the bank and ka-ching, ka-ching. Let's okay. just send it there.
Yeah, but we're rolling. We're having a good time, Junie. I'm glad that Robbie Stanley is now a father officially, so I'm pumped for the Stanley household and looking forward to meeting Allison Reese at some point in time. And so congratulations to the Stanley family. And yeah, it's been a fabulous week, including having PK on in the mornings with Joe Rexroad.
It has been. And honestly, you know, PK being on in the mornings has been highly entertaining.
Needless especially to say, with Stillman.
Especially with Jared. They're back and forth on Thursday. If you haven't listened to that, you got to go to thegamenashville.com and check out the podcast. 8 o'clock hour. They did 30 minutes of just
that was not
ripping
planned.
On each other. It was good. It was a good back and forth because Charles Robinson ended up having to come on Friday. He joined them at 7:15
yes.
To 7:45 on Friday. But yeah, Jared came and filled in on Thursday. Unbeknownst to him, kind of getting ripped on his job performance,
yes.
which was a bit wild. But
it was fun, though. You
it
know?
Was. It was.
Jared it was
had
really
some,
good.
Jared had some good comebacks to
yes.
what Paul had to say. Paul
and,
made some good points.
And what was really good was Joe sitting right here, kept looking at PK, and he goes, wait, let me just back up Stilly here really quickly.
Which is highly, if you tune into the program quite often, you know that that is a rarity. So
yes.
that is how bad it got. Joe Rexroad had to defend Jared Stillman. I mean, that was good stuff. That was good stuff. Their back
yes.
and forth is always great. But to kick off the show today, we're you know talking about some major headlines in the NFL. Your New Orleans Saints,
I know,
re-signed Cam Jordan to a 2-year.
Yes.
I think the total is around, what, 27, 28 million?
Yes, 27 and a half, I believe, but it's 13.75 annual AAV. So I love that move for the New Orleans Saints. He's one of my favorite players on the team. I know that he's had some issues, obviously, mm-hmm. throughout his career, but he is one of my favorites to watch in New Orleans. And I'm sure our colleague Michelle is probably pretty happy with that move as well, if I had to guess, being down there in New Orleans now.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Cam Jordan has been one of the more underrated defensive ends
yes.
in the league. He has been a state of consistency in the last couple of years. I feel like ever since Drew Brees has left, not a lot of people talk about Cam Jordan.
Nope.
So he is coming back.
Not even a lot while he was there. But, I mean, it was enough to the point where it was you knew – that Cam Jordan was probably their best defensive weapon most of the time. Now, there's
oh,
been
yeah.
some others as well, but that's a good that, – I think
you
it's
could,
a phenomenal.
You could argue Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah, I would – yeah, Marshawn,
nowadays.
Yeah, but
– but, yeah, no, definitely the Saints defense, had they had an underrated year as well last year.
And Kamara, too, you know, because, I mean, you know, we just found out yesterday he's going to miss the first three games and will not be going up against the Tennessee Titans week 1.
That's huge.
It is.
That is absolutely huge.
They're back. I think that their backfield is prepped for it, honestly.
Well, here's the thing, and you know, I could care less about the first three
sure.
games that aren't against the Titans, but for, like, in the sense of the matchup, right, you know, they have Williams back there. He obviously had 12 touchdowns last year in Detroit. But you got to understand is this Titans defense was number one in run defense last season. And for a downhill runner like Jamal Williams, you know, that's a good matchup for the Titans. And I
yeah.
think when you look at, you know, running backs that have given the Titans fits in the past, it's always been those dual threat guys. And Kamara is, I'd say outside of McCaffrey, he's the best dual threat, you know, running back in the game today.
I would say so. I think that's pretty fair. You know, I thought even his days at Tennessee, he showcased that quite a bit. But then when he became a pro, man, he's been one of my favorite running backs to watch. Obviously, he's on my favorite team that I watched growing up aside from mm-hmm. the Titans. But I really felt like at the time when they even drafted Kamara, he would be a guy that sticks around for a long time. You know, there was a lot of rumors about him getting moved off a couple of different times, and, you know, the running back market has changed so significantly. And so I'm curious to see what that running back room looks like the rest of the year. But the biggest question mark for me is Derek Carr, but we'll see how that looks. But that's a whole other can of worms. We're not here to talk too much about the Saints. But on another end, too, that I thought was unique, Junie, was that the Detroit Lions have completely sold out their season tickets. And it's the first time that they've ever done that.
I genuinely believe, you know, since they last won their last division title, which I think is in 1993.
Something like that.
Back when Barry Sanders was still playing. This is the first time that they've gone into a season as, like, the heavy favorite to win the division.
Expected to do something.
Because, you know, the Minnesota Vikings last year, they led the NFL and by a significant margin of, you know, one score, fourth quarter comeback victories. I believe they had eight last year. They were 13-4, but they have lost, I would say, a significant amount of talent. On that team, you know, you lose your number two in Adam Thielen. And I think, you know, although they drafted my receiver number one out of this last draft in Jordan Addison, it might take them a while to kind of get that connection going. They lost one of their off-ball linebackers, Kendricks. He's now with the Chargers. He was one of those guys that could really match up well against slot receivers and tight ends, constantly making big plays in the passing game. And in the modern NFL, I feel like that's very valuable. He was getting up there in age a little bit, but, you know, losing him, I feel like that and a couple other pieces that the Vikings lost, they're going to kind of take a step back. And it really is Detroit's division to lose. So super exciting for fans that have been hungry for a win. And honestly, if they do wind up winning the division, this will be the first ever playoff game to ever happen in Ford Field.
I know, which is insane to me to even think about, because I remember playing the old Madden games and taking them to the playoffs then, and it felt strange then, but now it's a real possibility. And that whole division will be really fun to watch this year. I think in some ways it'll be closer than what people probably think, but the Lions, oh my gosh, just the fact that they're expected to do something bigger this year than I would say the last decade, maybe. I don't know. But Matthew Stafford did a good job there. I'm glad to see that Jared Goff is having some success there as well after having a little bit of downtime with the Rams and being moved off of. And we'll see how they do this year, but it's a good storyline. It's a good upward trajectory for them. And one other thing that I kind of like about them is they don't really – like, they have the expectation, Junie, to be good – but I don't think it's big enough to where it's, you know, you have to necessarily. Like, it's not like they've been bad for a long enough where it's, okay, we're expected to actually do something this year. But even if it's not as great as what people thought, it's not going to be as disappointing, maybe. But also, too, with the roster, they should be expected to be a bigger team this year.
See, I would disagree with that. I genuinely think that, you know, my barber is actually a giant Lions fan from Detroit.
All right.
And I would say that he is very hungry for this team to actually do something. And, you know, Joe Rexroth talks about it all the time. He grew up a Lions fan, and he ditched his fandom just because of his frustration with the team. And I think that those fans that have hung on for so long and tried to wait until the day had come to where they're back into relevancy this year with how, you know, the NFC is easily the much weaker conference, and it's very much so wide open. And you look at this, and you can make the argument that Detroit has a top three roster in that conference. And it's about time that they do something with it. Mm-hmm. And I think with the hype around Dan Campbell, the step that they took forward, you know, I think that Lions fans are hungry for this, and they do expect them to kind of take that. Because, I mean, again, there's no Favre, no Rodgers in Green Bay. The Bears are still working. I think that they're going to be a much improved team. But, again, how much are they going to? And Minnesota obviously taking a step back. But in other news, you know, Taylor Lewan came to Twitter saying that he has a big announcement. And PK, again, like we alluded to earlier, was on the morning show earlier this week. He had some comments about what he thinks that announcement is going to be.
Taylor Lewan is going to officially retire before the season starts. And I know that's not some big shock based on the pictures you've seen of him and how much weight he's lost and all of that.
He's a slot receiver.
But an official retirement is an official retirement, so that's coming.
That was PK Paul Kaharski filling in for Robbie Stanley, who, again, congratulations on young Allison Reese. Robbie Stanley is the newest dad here in Nashville. But I think we all saw this coming. I remember, you know, early in the offseason conversations when he did get cut, that there were, you know, a lot of people talked about if he would come back. I never thought he would come back.
There
were rumors of other teams that had interest. I looked at it and I saw the amount of weight he was losing, and I think it's very clear and cut now that, you know, he looks like a tight end. Even in the Beer Olympics videos, like, I mean, a guy that used to be 300 plus pounds, you could start to see like abs on his stomach. I mean, listen, he's not going to be playing left tackle anytime soon when you got to put 60 pounds on in like a month or so.
And that's being generous to even get him back into the spot, probably.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's like gaining all that weight so quickly. Like, what does that do to your ligaments? And we know his issues with his knees, yes, and stuff like that, and the process that he's going with the doctors that repaired that. So I just never thought it was a
chance. No, I never thought he would come back either. And I think after he got hurt last year, that was sort of the worry about him, was he wouldn't be able to come back and play football, or that he may not be interested to come back and play football. And I'm completely fine with his choice. And they've been teasing it all week on their social media account, Bussin' with the Boys, and also Taylor and Will. They've been kind of talking about something is coming, and they've had a lot of, you know, bad experience with Expedia, too, on social media. But anyway, I think it's been fun to watch Taylor with the success that he had as a player with the Two-Tone Blue. Looking forward to seeing what his announcement is. It may not be anything related to his career. It could very well just be a big announcement for their brand, possibly. I don't know. It could be a conjoined announcement, but time will tell. But that's going to be something to keep an eye on here in Nashville.
Now something to note here. A few weeks ago when Mike Vrabel was on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He did mention, he's like, you know, am I going to get my own press conference? Am I going to get, you know, this is. Mm-hmm. And Vrabel's like, yeah. So I think that them talking about it there on that platform and a few weeks later, you know, coming out with
it's
an announcement.
It's a good hint.
I think that had to be in the talks and the works
right
afterwards. So it's easily something that is going to get forward. But, you know, our number one of Riddle and the Reporter, we're going to get into the college football realignment conversation a little bit later this hour. Also, we are going to start our NFL division previews later on in the show. But coming up next, we are going to dive into some of the latest narratives from Titans training camp after this week. What has been going on? And there was also a big-time release that was highly unexpected going into the week. We will get into that next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
The decision on DeMarco, is that as simple as him doing some things outside of what you're looking for practice?
Yeah, I think I'm going to leave it at this, that we all have a responsibility to the team. I think my job is to protect the team. I think the player's job is to find a way onto that team. And so we always are going to hold the team in high regard and make sure that everything we do and how we carry ourselves is in the best interest of the team.
That was Mike Vrabel yesterday when being asked about the release of DeMarco Jones. Basically, he just laid it out straight. He said, listen, this guy, we said it. We are going to practice how we play. And if you are fighting in a game, you're going to be hurting the team.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I know Chase has kind of done his sandpit of doom. And it's been funny. But, I mean, Vrabel obviously took this seriously. So DeMarco Jones on Tuesday got into kind of a helmet-tugging match with Jeffrey Simmons. They got both of them kicked out. And I think initially DeMarco got told to go inside, and Jeff Simmons had to go to the sand pit. DeMarco later would go out to the sand pit and do some workouts. And you would think that would kind of be the extent of it, because with the Nicholas Petit-Ferrer suspension, DeMarco Jones was really the favorite to kind of take over at that right tackle position. And then on Thursday, after having an off day on Wednesday, He throws a dirty blindside block crackback on either – I've been seeing multiple sources on this. It was either Jack Gibbons or Chance Campbell. I've seen multiple people say different, but either way, an inside linebacker. So, one of the two. So let's say it's just Chance Campbell.
Yeah,
and then that started a fight. Azeez Al-Shaair had to get pulled away. There was a lot of words. And even GM Rand Carthon had to sit and calm Azeez Al-Shaair down. And that ultimately led to Jamarco Jones's release after practice Thursday.
And this whole situation, look, if he had kept his temper to himself, his temperament at least to the approach of practice is, I'm here to challenge for a spot. I'm here to assert myself. In any given situation that you've got being out there on the field with your new teammates, needless to say, which, by the way, you have your head coach who's already vouching for you even being here, by the way. He was with Seattle. He was a fifth-round pick. Now he's here in Nashville. Not anymore. But he had that defense of, the coaches kind of liked me. I knew I could come in here and be myself and also try to stand out. But no, he let the better part of just his attitude get in the way of whatever was going on out there on the field this week. And look, the sand pit of doom doesn't matter to me. It's all about this temperament for me that I'm like, look, if he went out there with the intention of I'm here to just be myself, great. But you don't need to go off on your teammates. That's just uncalled for, and it's unprofessional. And just like what you just said, it's not going to fly in a game. Why would it fly any other time? I didn't know that about Rand Carthon either. So,
yeah, no, that was from Jim Wyatt's breakdown of practice that he had mentioned that. So,
but that just baffles me.
Yeah, and another thing too, and this kind of goes to show you the length that Vrabel gave this guy. You know, he recruited him to Ohio State.
Yes.
Like, he was a part of that. He has known Jamarco Jones since he was in high school, had a lot of belief in this guy, and he soils his opportunity. And it's like, for one thing to kind of get into a bit of a tugging match with Jeffrey Simmons, I get that. That happens with offense and defensive linemen at every single training camp at all 32 teams across the league. That's one thing.
Yes.
But you throw a dirty block intentionally out of frustration because apparently the defense was dominating up until that point. And apparently it was out of frustration and them kind of chirping and talking. And he did that deliberately. And when you do that and it hurts the team, especially for a guy like Chance Campbell, who a lot of us have making this final 53-man roster, a big special teams player, depth at that inside linebacker position, you know, doing that is, one, going to get somebody hurt, but, like, that doesn't even fly in a game.
No, it doesn't.
Nevertheless, a guy on your own team in practice.
Yes, and it doesn't look good for him. Even in terms of his career, Junie. I mean, think about it this way. And I'm looking at his numbers right now just for context's sake. And quite frankly, taking a look at this does not encourage me for where he even could land up possibly. I think if at anything, he could be a practice squad player for someone or the right team that goes and says, look, you join us. However, keep your cool, man. But look, he's also only been part of 36 games. He's only started in seven.
Yeah.
Seven games since you've been drafted. And this is the type of crap that you put out there on the field? No, I don't think this would be warranted whatsoever. I'm sure that he's had frustration with people that know him too. Look, that's just part of it. I get it. You're a 27-year-old man playing in the NFL, and I really think this could have been your opportunity to be a starter in the league, and you pretty much blow it here with Mike Vrabel giving you another second chance, I would say. Look, he played in two playoff games for Seattle too. That's something to think about too. So he knows he's capable of doing it. The coaches know that he's capable of doing it, Junie. So that's frustrating to see. And quite frankly, if it does hurt the Titans, this is one thing that you're going to circle back to, is he blew up at training camp, and that was the one problem.
So I think at this moment in time now, we look at a guy like Chris Hubbard, who they signed off the streets, a veteran guy that, you know, had a bunch of starts as a depth piece at right tackle for the Steelers and Browns going back to, you know, 2017, to 2018, 2019. He seems to be the favorite now. That's the first guy that kind of got the opportunity since Jamarco Jones' departure from the Titans. So we will be looking forward to that. Some key notes also from Titans training camp yesterday is John Ajokwu, who Vrabel likes to call OJ.
Yep.
He went down with an injury and also did tight end Alize Mack in Friday's practice. Didn't seem like either of those were too much something serious, but obviously something to look forward to as the first preseason game against the Chicago Bears up there in Chicago is 1 week away. So it's actually going to be right after our show at noon next Saturday. So we're going to have to book it home to watch that. So other things to look forward to, I would say Levis had a really good Monday and Tuesday. And then Malik Willis had really good days on Thursday and Friday. So the backup quarterback position continuously is heating up. And I just cannot wait to see these guys actually get into a game setting during the preseason and watch how both of them look. And I really do hope that they get opportunities with the same units. Mm-hmm. That way we can really compare, because it's always hard when one guy gets all the reps against and with the second team unit, and then the other guy is with the third team. It's always hard to gauge, you know, how well are these guys actually performing when they're playing with and against two different talent level of players.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if I want to go ahead and make this statement, I would say, and it's not, there's not much to read into other than, like you just said, who they would be playing with out there during the preseason games. I would say that we'll see Malik start preseason, I would say, and then you would go into Will Levis, I would believe. So,
oh, no, I definitely think that that's how they should play it. But I want to see Will Levis with the twos just as much as Malik.
Oh, absolutely.
And vice versa, with the threes as well. I want to see Will and how he plays with the threes, and Malik. And how, like, I want to see how these guys look with both units. And that's the only way that we're going to get an accurate gauge, because as of right now, these guys have been neck and neck.
Yes.
And this has honestly been a surprise to me. I thought Will Levis was going to come in, and I thought with the momentum he was having earlier in the week, he was really going to take that and take leaps and bounds forwards. But obviously, later in the week, Malik Willis has responded. So props to Malik. I mean,
yeah,
this is going to be interesting. So this is kind of a question I wanted to gauge here. You know, during this preseason, I can't really think of another team that has as many interesting, like, preseason storylines as the quarterback battle as we're seeing right now.
Maybe
between
the
these two guys.
49ers a little bit, just because not and that's not a preseason as much, but you know what I mean? Like, still something there.
I think that's a TV argument. I think that they know if Brock Purdy is healthy with what he did last year, I think he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, what about maybe the not the Falcons. I don't think I would say anything.
No, Ritter's for sure going to be the starter there. But it's like, and again, you know,
what about Tampa?
I think that's Baker. I really think it's Baker. Kyle Trask, in my opinion, is not good.
I was listening to Colin Cowherd talking about how if it's even close for Baker in that competition, he should just retire.
Yeah. No, I mean, he should. I mean, he's a, you know, Heisman winner, first overall pick. And, you know, Kyle Trask, I believe he was a third round, maybe late second. I can't remember. But, you know, the talent level between the two shouldn't even be comparable, especially with all the experience Baker Mayfield has. And even though Tampa does have one of the more washed out rosters, I mean, you still have Godwin and Evans at the wide receiver.
But if anything else stands out to you, just text us 615-737-1025. And just wanted to rattle off a few things for you there.
Yeah,
Junie.
But it just kind of comes down to this. It's like there's not another team that has like a veteran quarterback and then two quarterbacks below him, like fighting to see who's going to take that mantle, you know, in the future, whether it's this year, whether it's next year. You know, I don't know a comparable situation in the league that is similar to that. I feel like a lot of teams this year are going into camp having either their guy solidified or somebody who is very much so heavily favored, kind of like a Baker Mayfield or a Brock Purdy with with the Niners and Bucks. But it is very interesting. A few other things that I've noted from this week. Azeez Al-Shaair, somebody that I've personally questioned whether or not he was going to come in and be a really good inside linebacker after losing David Long Jr. Apparently, this guy's been all over the field in the run game and in the pass game, breaking up a lot of passes to guys like Chigakonkwo and others, and then making plays in the backfield in the run game against Derrick Henry. Like, stepping up and meeting a guy like him, meeting Hassan Haskins in the backfield, another pretty powerful back. He's been making plays on both sides, and it really kind of gives me some more confidence with this defense, knowing that he's taken leaps and bounds after being a rotational piece last year.
Absolutely, and I've been keeping track of all the other media members as well while they're out there, and I really choose to believe that not only is Azeez standing out too, I feel like at times we've heard good things about Arden Key. Not just with his voice. We all know that that's probably the strongest part to his personality out there on the field. But it's also good to know that Azeez, like you pointed out, he's making plays against some of the most important pieces in this offense, and that is the most attractable thing to me about him so far at training camp. So we'll see what else happens. You know, it's pretty much a game week, so they're going to be approaching it like that this week. I know that there's going to be three practices that we'll be able to be going to this week. I believe it's Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, something like that. So we'll see what it looks like this week. Very curious to see who stays healthy and who's going to be part of the second and third team going into that preseason game, Junie.
Absolutely. So coming up next, we are going to dive into the college football realignment. I don't know about Nick, but I have some strong feelings about everything that is going on in the sport. We are going to break down all the latest news that is happening with conference realignment. Next, you're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Welcome!
Tune into the Chase McCabe Show and Caroline, Willie, and D-Mates to, I'm sorry, Monday, as they broadcast live from Titans training camp. It said today. They'll get player interviews and deliver the latest updates with Titans practice as a team preps for the 2023 season. Coverage of Titans training camp is presented by the Simmons Bank Open, Parman Energy, Cottle Vet Clinic, and the new Cumberland Development. They will be out there, like you had previously mentioned, on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Gotta get that plug in,
next
man.
Week. Hopefully, it's good hopefully weather. The rain does not ruin that, right. Because they were supposed to be out there 3 days last week, and they did not get out there as much because of the weather. You know, I'm not big on the rain. I hate it when it rains. For a while there, it felt like we were living in Florida for a bit. So.
Take a poncho. Get absolutely. Out there.
So, I would say the biggest news in sports going on right now is college football realignment.
This is insane.
We are going to wait till a little bit later to give our opinions on this, but we want to give you the latest because all of this came down super quickly. I mean, if you would have asked me if Oregon and Washington were going to be a part of the Big Ten on Monday, I would have said, you're crazy.
But then also, too, Arizona State, and Utah going to the Big 12.
Well, don't forget about Colorado. So you're talking about four teams from the Pac-12 in the last year
right.
are now moving to the Big 12, and then you got four teams from the Pac-12 in the last year including, you know, USC and UCLA
right.
moving to the Big Ten.
Yeah, so, I mean, and by the way, these are formal things that have happened. In case you missed it, Junie and I are talking about it. This is real. This is actually happening. So,
and it all came official yesterday afternoon. You said that the Big Ten accepted.
It was around 5 yesterday.
Around 5 o'clock yesterday.
5 central.
And what was nuts is, you know, obviously, you know, rumblings had kind of come out around, you know, Wednesday, Thursday mm-hmm. about all this stuff. And then on Friday morning, I was looking, and it said that Oregon would not be going to the Big Ten.
See, that's what I saw, too.
And then they were like, they're going to try and sway Arizona to not go to the Big 12 if Oregon is trying to stay and stay true. Because I would say, especially with USC and UCLA moving to the Big Ten, and that happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they, you know, they haven't moved yet, but they announced that they were moving next season, last summer. And so Oregon was like probably the biggest brand left in the Pac-12. So now, it you know, in me thinking that they had the potential to stay, I was like, okay, maybe they can somewhat keep this conference together, maybe get a few teams from the Mountain West and just make do mm-hmm. With what they have. Because, I mean, already I was not happy with UCLA and USC going
right.
to the Big Ten. But now it seems it's like you have like a whole Western division in the Big Ten. So.
Right. So, and here's what the Pac-12 actually said in a statement, and I quote, "Today's news is incredibly disappointing for student-athletes, fans, alumni, and staff of the Pac-12 who cherish over 100 years of history, tradition, and rivalries of the Conference of Champions. We remain focused on securing the best possible future for each of our member universities." Also, Nicole Auerbach, this is who I was looking more at yesterday because she was breaking a lot of this as quickly as possible. So, like you had said to start off this segment, Oregon originally, and I believe it was the University of Washington. Those two schools was kind of like, oh, well, we don't really know if we want to go over there yet. But then it happened quickly. Like I said, around 5 o'clock yesterday, they all kind of came out and was like, all right, nope, we're all going now. It's official. So they're going over to the Big Ten, and they're going to join next season. When all these moves take place too, and even in our own Conference USA, you and I going over to Western, like schools saying that they're transitioning, that transition year is so strange for a lot of schools because they know where they're going. But you consciously know that, okay, we're here for another year. Yay. Let's go off here. But now they're moving.
What ticks me off about all of this is that it has nothing to do with the game itself.
No.
It has everything to do with money. And this all originates from the Pac-12 working on a new, you know, TV deal and who they were going to go with. And they presented the conference with an Apple TV Plus subscription. The same thing that the MLS is on.
Yeah,
and let me tell you, I love Nashville SC. And we talk about Nashville SC. We put a spot for Nashville SC on this show to talk about it because I enjoy the team and I enjoy the sport. But guess what? I'm not paying $22 a month to sit here and watch MLS and get the MLS package. And so who in their right mind is going to do the same thing for Pac-12 football? Nobody wants to pay extra money to do this. I'm so sick of all these streaming services coming in and making it streaming only, and you got to buy all these different outlets just to watch all your teams.
It's frustrating. It really is.
And why? And if you're a program, why would you want to deal with that?
So, I mean, don't know.
Part of me blames the Pac-12 for this, but also just conference realignment in general has just been a huge issue. It's ruining the integrity of the game. And when I look at this and I'm thinking about, like, who's left, growing up, like, watching a bunch of these rivalries, I really enjoyed, like, Oregon and Stanford back in the day. That was always a good one. Oregon and Oregon State. You had Washington and Washington State. That's no longer going to be a thing. You know, UCLA and Cal. There's just so many historic rivalries that are going to be ruined because of this. And it's just frustrating that it's all over money.
Yeah,
you know?
It's so disappointing to see. And not only are you going to see all of this take place, but you're also going to see all these other schools. You know, I saw someone joking on Twitter, couldn't even tell you who it was, that it's like, oh, you know, we're going to go over to play in the West, and it's going to be a, you know, 11 o'clock tip-off for a volleyball. It's like, yeah, you're going to have really late games now. And it's like,
I mean,
you're going to have to travel.
Genuinely think about this. Rutgers, yes, who is all the way on the East Coast, is going to have to, within a two-year span, they're going to have to fly out to Washington, Eugene, Oregon, and then to L.A. a couple times to play the two L.A. teams. It's absurd. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. No.
College football is all about region, rivalry, history. And all of that is being taken away because of money.
It's all about pushing that paper, dude. That's exactly what they've been doing for years.
And here's the deal. Is it really going to make the game better?
I don't really look. I heard this on the midday was, well, it's making the product better. How? How is it making the product better? You know what? The transfer portal makes it better. Actually, quite frankly, the portal could even make it worse at times. The portal, for me, even expresses that this is a free agent class. Go play wherever you want. And ultimately, what this is going to do is really change nothing other than the TV deals and saying, hey, we're in a bigger and better conference now. That's all that matters. And so, will the product change? It depends where you're getting good recruiting. That's what matters. It doesn't matter who's going to what conference. Look, don't get me wrong. The next few years, we are going to see this conference probably be pretty strong, Judy. That is probably very true. But long-term wise, I don't think it's going to affect anything. Not really.
And it more or less, like, is it really going to, you know, help the programs that are moving there?
No.
Because you're talking about, you know, USC, UCLA. They haven't done anything, you know, since the early 2000s, especially UCLA. Like, UCLA
sure.
hasn't been a part of anything in football, you know, this century. Like,
yeah.
USC had some good years under Pete Carroll and company there in the Reggie Bush years in the early 2000s. But, you know, ever since then, they've been a major disappointment. A team that's always been overhyped, overranked, being thrown in the top 10 based off of their brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then every single year they fall out of the conversation. And the best that they ever finish is in the mid-teens in the top 25,
yeah.
which means nothing for a program with
no.
the history that they have.
No, it
and
doesn't.
Now you're going to go in with Ohio State, Michigan State, like Wisconsin. And you think that you're going to be a perennial program and that's going to help you compete?
Yeah.
I think it's going to do the opposite.
I think it will, and I think it absolutely could. Now, the the sport I'm most passionate about, Junie, before we go to break here, I think that could grow. You could see hockey grow. You could. You absolutely could see that part of it grow. NCAA hockey could kind of grow out of this a little bit more, so kind of go out west a little bit. But look, in the grand scheme of things, what you and I are talking about, it's atrocious to see that this is taking place as it is. Look, even like, look, I mean, just to make a small storyline really quickly, even in Conference USA, where you and I came from before I left and graduated, there was a lot of talk about some of those schools that are now in the conference joining. And it's mainly because of the money. It's about who's going to be on TV, who's going to get those CBS games. And look, they're not traveling too much differently, but that's just one facet. I know Conference USA is not a big conference compared to these, but look, this is going around the entire country, whether you like it or not.
So before the show, I did a deep dive in the history of conference realignment, and we are going to take a trip in the past and talk about where this started, why this has been going on, and how things used to be, and if they were better or not. I think you already kind of have an idea of where we are going with this. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter. We are going to get in that next. You're listening to us on here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Superbook Sports invites you to a special UFC post-match party with Dustin Jacoby after the fights tonight at Landshark Bar and Grill in Margaritaville on South Broadway. Follow Superbook Sports on social media for more information. That's going to be fun, dude. UFC at Bridgestone Arena tonight. Is this the first time UFC's been in Tennessee?
No, it's second. Not.
It's the second time.
Yeah, it's the first time that I've seen it here in Tennessee since I've been in residence.
It will be awesome.
Yeah, it really will be.
Electricity in one building that cannot be described.
Well, think about it. If you imagine what hockey games were like, look, even when the Nashville Cats were being showcased back in 98, you know, Jay Moore was telling me about how they took him to a Nashville Cats game before the actual Preds play, and he's like, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's going to be really, really fun, UFC. That was a really random comment to make. But look, that's going to be really fun to have UFC. This sports are coming to Nashville, baby, and I love all the pro sports here in town. Even the Grand Prix is here, so there you go. And it's going to probably be raining later. So,
so we just talked about all the latest with college football. Yes. One thing that we failed to mention last segment is Florida State and them trying to get out of the ACC. Now, it's going to be a lot harder for them because they're kind of tied in. I think it's going to cost them well over $100 million to break out. And they have their deal running through 2036, which a lot of these other conferences, their deals are expiring now. So it's going to be harder for Florida State to move out of the ACC, but they're still pushing really, really hard to kind of find a way to finagle their way out and join either likely the SEC, because now with the Big Ten being at 18 teams, we're going to probably see the SEC try and snag up two more teams to stay in lockstep with them. So, but I wanted to dial back, you know, really to my childhood. I started kind of watching college football really around 2004 and 2005, and back then was really when the conferences were perfect. I mean, you had the ACC, all coastal teams. Right there on the East Coast, up and down, right? Then you had the SEC, which is the Southeast, the heart of the South. You had the Big East, which was kind of mostly the Northeast, but a little bit of the Midwest there with, you know, Pittsburgh and Louisville and even South Florida. You know, they're not an East Coast team, but you know, they're still in the East. Then you had the Big Ten, which was the big in the Midwest. You had, you know, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, like all right there. It all regionally made sense. The Big 12 was the Southwest, in the middle of the country, the plains of the USA, and then you had the Pac-10, and that was the West Coast teams.
Yeah, and that was fun.
And it seemed like everything was oriented. And on top of that, college football was really balanced.
It was. And also, too, I miss the days of, and this may have been for you, too, growing up. And I know for me, being down here in SEC country, it was you started out the day watching College Game Day. Then after that, you'd have your breakfast. That's what I did with all my buddies. We all ran over to eat. I think we always switched houses. But like just like the nostalgic days of waking up, you get to hang out with your buddies, have breakfast. Then you go through and you see Corso make his dumb picks or, you know, be funny, put those helmets on or the mascot heads on and whatever. But also, too, staying up all night to watch as long of college football as you want, especially because the games are on out west. All the big SEC games are wrapping up usually. And so the days of staying up late and enjoying it are probably going to go away a little bit and maybe go away sooner rather than we like. Because, look, like you mentioned about the streaming, and streaming is not going to go away, but I think streaming will hurt it a little bit because not everyone's going to want to pay that subscription. Not everyone's going to want to be doing that. And you could bootleg it. You could pay it, obviously, but let's be realistic. You'd probably rather go. But even if you go, it costs so much damn money to go and it just budget for every single game. Look, I know a guy that travels for LSU, and that's his devotion to life, is going to all the LSU games. Probably has the longest record of going to consecutive games. But we're going to see a lot of devoted fans, I feel like, Junie, and families that have student athletes. They're not going to be able to support them as much as they would probably like to. And that's another sad part to this that is unfortunately a storyline.
So I ran some numbers here. And so I wanted to start with the first year I really started watching college football in 2004. Up to 2011, which I think that era for me is how college football was supposed to be made.
All right.
So I did a thing of top 25 finishes for teams in those conferences.
I like it.
The ACC had 29 teams within that span between 2004 and 2011 finished in the top 25 in the final AP poll. The Big 12 had 30. The Big 10 had 29. The Big East had 16. The SEC had 39, and the Pac-10 had 24.
So balanced.
So it was very balanced. The only really outliers were the SEC and the Big East. Obviously, the Big East didn't have as many teams as the other conferences. The Big East, out of the Power Six, when it was still the Power Six, was the weakest conference, and obviously the SEC. But when you looked at the Pac-10, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC, they were all right there with one another.
They were, and it was
constantly
fun
competing. So I also ran some numbers as well. Since 2000, championship appearances per conference. This might surprise you.
Okay, let's go.
Since 2000, championship appearances in the ACC, 8. The Big 12, 8. The Big 10, 5. Big East, 0. SEC, 20.
Of course.
There's your two outliers.
There you go.
And the Pac-10, 4. So again, you're talking ACC, Big 12, Big 10, and Pac-10 during that era, very, very close. Now let's go to championship wins.
Okay.
ACC, 4. Big 12, 2. Big 10, 2. Big East, 0. SEC, 14. And Pac-10, 1. So again, the same four conferences outside of the Big East and SEC, which are outliers in college football at this time period, They were roughly very close to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about this is the Big Ten has less championship appearances and just as many championships as the Big 12 and less than the ACC. And really that's dominated all by Ohio State.
Yeah.
All of those appearances are Ohio State. And it's like, why is it the Big Ten that everybody's rushing to go be a part of?
Mm-hmm.
When really all the other conferences since the year 2000, outside of the Big East, and I'd say they're better than the Pac-10, but the Big 12 and ACC have been better than them.
Yeah, they absolutely have been. And when they have won, it has been impressive wins, too, for the most part. I would want to, you know, just toss out there is, look, whenever they've won, it's been more impressive because when they do get there, they're huge standouts. They love when they have a storyline like that pop up where it's, hey, we're here, we're going to win. And guess what? They usually have a really damn good team, and that's been fun to watch too. You know one other part too that I think influences a lot of what is going on today that I think is quite obvious is NIL. And
yeah.
Here's why I want to say that. All the kids, like I even alluded to earlier, this portal, it's essentially free agency. So when you see all these kids going across the country, changing, going wherever they want to. Hey, I didn't get enough playing time here. I'm going to leave. Vrabel talked about that on Bussin, actually, too. He brought up how, look, I don't want to coach that. Oh, if I'm not a starter, I'm just going to leave. Yeah, they will. They'll go somewhere else. They'll go play for either, you know, a smaller school, or they'll go up and they'll play somewhere else. But look, I feel like, too, all the talent, when all of these schools leave and go to these conferences, Junie, they're going to attract all of these free agents, if you ask me, these free agent athletes, whatever you want to call them. And look, you're going to have an oversaturated amount of athletes going to certain conferences. I'd love to see in the next couple of years, maybe 2-3 years, but I think a 5-year outlook of what the portal looks like, where these schools got the most transfers from, I'd love to see that.
It'll definitely be interesting. College football, as we know it, is no longer. And before we head to break, I'm going to pull up three instances that changed it. Number one, in 2011, when Nebraska and Colorado left the Big 12, Nebraska goes to the Big 10, Colorado goes to the Pac-12. And then the following year, the Big 12 also loses A&M and Missouri. So the Big 12 lost four teams in 2 years. And A&M and Missouri obviously went to the SEC where they are now. And then in 2013, the Big East dismantles and becomes the AAC, essentially, in Pittsburgh and Syracuse moved to the ACC. Ever since then, college football has never been the same. And I think it's genuinely ruining the sport. And when it comes down to money dictating how the sport is, and the fans having a high disapproval rating, it's very disappointing to see money take over something that has been so precious to so many people. But coming up next, we're going to take a bit of a turn. Next 5 weeks, we are going to be breaking down divisions and then leading up to our season preview of the NFL. We start with the AFC and NFC East to kick off the 10 o'clock hour. We will get into that next. You are listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.